It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff Jarvis has the week off. Stacey Higginbotham is here. Kevin Toefel joins us. Google may be facing a new record penalty from the EU. We'll talk about why. Marcus Brownlee's OnePlus 6 review that turned into an ad. What did he know and when did he know it? Plus, we get ready for Prime Day. It's all coming up next on This Week in Google.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 464, recorded Wednesday, July 11th, 2018. There's a flag for that. This Week in Google is brought to you by WordPress. Reach more customers when you build your business website on WordPress.com. Plans start at just $4 a month and get 15% off any new plan at WordPress.com/twig. And by LastPass, secure every password-protected entry point to your business. Join over 33,000 businesses and start managing and securing your company's passwords today. Learn more at LastPass.com/twit. And by Rocket Mortgage, by Quicken Loans. Introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/twig. It's time for This Week in Google, a show where we cover the latest news from, well, not just Google, but anything going on in the Googleverse. Because we've got the verse and the song. And Stacey Higginbotham is the song from StaceyOnIoT.com. Hello, Stacey!
Hello, y'all!
Happy 4th of July. We didn't have a show last week.
I celebrated accordingly.
Good. You set off bombs.
You know, we didn't. It was pouring rain.
Oh, so bummer.
But we did have tacos, queso, and a big party.
That seems like a good idea. That sounds like fun.
Tacos are never a bad idea.
Did you invite Kevin over?
You know, I didn't. Kevin knows he has an open invitation to my house anytime. He and his entire family.
It's more than I can say. Kevin Toefel is also here about Chromebooks.com and Stacey's co-host on the IoT show. Good to have you, Kevin.
Yes. Good to be here. I have all the codes to Stacey's house on my phone, so I can get in now.
You can probably control her house from where you are. Those blinds, they keep going up and down.
I know. I've got to be very careful never to do Kevin wrong.
So we could begin the show now because Kevin and I have stopped watching football. Kevin's wearing an appropriate jersey, though, I note. Mm-hmm. He's a Liverpool fan. Liverpool Football Club. Oi.
Wait, someone mark this day. Whoa.
You have a tattoo?
I do.
Is that a real tattoo or just a temporary?
Yes, it's a real tattoo.
Oh, my God. Oh, he's more serious about this than I thought.
Yeah, so I have a Beatles tattoo on the back, too.
Is that why you're a Liverpool fan?
You know what? I had to pick a team, and it just made sense. I'm like, okay, well, I love the Beatles, so I have to go with Liverpool or Everton, because they're both in the same area. And I just chose Liverpool, and that was it.
Holy cow.
Yeah. Fan for life.
It's the only time I've seen Kevin not in a Beatles shirt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kevin and I actually are brothers from another mother, because I'm also a massive Beatles fan. And I have a tattoo of a beetle on my bottom. Unfortunately, mine's an actual bug. No, I don't. I don't have either. I do have a twit bug, but that was for charity. And it's a long... So I'm watching the game, which has now ended. I'm watching it at work, like a lot of people probably are doing illicitly, streaming it on YouTube TV, when at the half, suddenly... You could show my screen, Karsten. Whoops. Currently, there's no content available for this page. Refresh page to try, which means I kept refreshing it. And it was about an hour before it came back. YouTube TV went down in the middle of the World Cup semifinals. This is not good. Arguably, more people watching it than during the NFL's Super Bowl. Probably.
Didn't this happen to Comcast or someone during the Olympics? Their streams also went down.
The difference is nobody cared about it during the Olympics.
I care about the Olympics.
The Winter Olympics? Come on. Really?
Summer, maybe. Winter Olympics
are awesome. Summer? What's in summer?
Track.
This, you know, Stacey, that just like a regular game by the Liverpool Football Club is watched by more people than watch the Super Bowl every year? You know that, right?
Yes. Yes. I'm aware of the fanatic soccer/football fans. I'm just saying that like streaming platforms go down and it just seems like they're the worst time.
Well,
but YouTube, I mean, Google, come on. They know how to deliver video. What's going on there?
Kind of surprising, really, yeah.
I was going to switch to YouTube, but I'm sticking with PlayStation View because it was rock solid.
Yeah, so that's how you were watching it.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things. We're in a battle now between Sling TV, PlayStation View, YouTube TV. There's some new ones. There's a new one called Philo that doesn't have locals. And this is a real battle for over-the-top cord cutters. And when you go down during a major event like this, that's got to hurt. YouTube TV tweeted, they said, "Hey, everyone, sincere apologies for..." Hold on, the tweet will come up in a second. I don't know why Twitter really confuses Chrome.
Twitter's down.
Twitter's not down. Hey, everyone. You know, it's funny. They used to be down all the time, right? Twitter, we haven't seen a fail whale in years. "Hey, everyone, sincere apologies for streaming issues with YouTube TV. The timing is horrible. But we're working to be up and running again ASAP." It was about an hour. About one full hour. In critical scorings was lost. They came back at the end of the game, so I was able to watch the end. "We're so sorry about the service interruption. We understand your frustration." Yeah. And I wonder how many people PlayStation View is going to win from this. They're all the same price, right? What do you pay for your PlayStation View, Kevin?
It's $40 yeah. a month, but they just upped it $5. Actually, like three of the different competitors just went up $5 a month. So it's pretty much the same, yeah.
Yeah, YouTube TV was $40, or at least I got it for $35 during the trial, and I'm still grandfathered in it for. But you also, the YouTube TV doesn't have tiers. They have just the one offering, which includes locals. PlayStation View, they have some tiers. You can start at 40, then 45, right. 55, and 75. Kind of more like cable.
Yeah, we just do the core. I mean, I just need my sports and other stuff. And sometimes I even supplement it with Fubo TV because they've got Pac-12 Network, which I like to watch. And, you know, so sometimes I'm paying for two of these services. But the nice thing is you watch it for a season of sports and then you cancel it. That's it.
Philo, which is the new kid in town, try.philo.com, is cheap. It's $16, but they don't have any sports. And so this is really, they say, I think they're aiming at millennials who apparently don't care as much about sports. So they have MTV and Comedy Central. They have the Food Network. They have AMC and A&E. Stuff I think that they're aiming at Viceland. They're aiming at the kids, at the millennials who don't have as much money. They actually started, I think, as a college station, college-wired colleges, and now they're just now available for everybody at $16.
It's funny you bring them up.
Why?
I just signed up for them just last night for a trial because we were thinking, as I said, going to YouTube TV before today's debacle, and my wife wants Food Network, and I want HGTV, don't judge me, and neither of those are on YouTube TV, so I figure, for $16 a month, we can get those and a few other channels with Philo. So I just signed up yesterday.
Interesting.
So how much are you paying in total now for television services?
More than cable.
Well, no.
It's a good question. Do you consider internet as part of that?
Because, yeah, it has to be, right?
Well, it does.
No, not like your base broadband. No.
Because you'd have that anyway.
Exactly.
Right. I'm just talking about like over-the-top services.
So it's $40 for PlayStation View. I added Philo yesterday. That'll be $16 a month if we stick with it. Of course, we have Netflix, but T-Mobile pays that for me, except for $3 a month, because that's their deal. They give you free Netflix if you're a subscriber. Amazon Prime we have as well. So it doesn't add up to be that much.
So that's $60, and then cost of Prime, which is $120. So what is that a month? $70 a month.
That's about what you'd pay for a cable.
Cable's still like $99.
Is it that expensive? Wow.
Yeah, I'd probably still have Prime anyway, and I'd probably still have Netflix anyway, even if I had cable.
Yeah, good point.
So
sure.
It is interesting to watch this happen. Of course, it's one of the reasons AT&T bought Time Warner, because one of the reasons Comcast has bought NBC Universal. The pipes need to own. We've talked about this a lot in the past. Want to own the content because it's not enough just to be a pipe anymore. You know, you don't have a lock-in like you used to.
You know what we're not paying, just to close that loop on price, because a lot of people don't think about this. We were paying like $12 for each cable box. We were paying an extra fee for DVR service. I mean, my fees just for the rentals and DVR was like $40 to $50 a month alone.
I have to say now, I did try, because they all have 1 week trials. So I tried them all just kind of for review purposes. This was about a year ago when AT&T's DirecTV Now just came out. It was not working very well at the time because they didn't, I guess they weren't prepared for the traffic. But I stick with YouTube TV because it's, to me, that's the nicest interface of the bunch. I really like the interface of YouTube TV.
I wish that would come on the Roku. Or has that changed? Because the last time I checked, I couldn't.
No, it's on
it drives
Apple
me nuts.
It's on Apple TV now, which is good.
Yeah, but I'm not an Apple person.
Yeah.
I don't like simplicity.
I do think there is, this is the other problem, right, is there's this natural animosity between these all these groups. And Roku doesn't like YouTube for some reason. I don't know why. Comcast didn't like Roku for a long time. You couldn't activate HBO Go on Roku using your Comcast subscription. They finally hammered that out a few months ago. So and this is the problem for normal people. It's quite a mess. It's hard to, I think this is the intention. I think the cable companies are really trying. They're kind of like Russia at this point. They just want to sow confusion because then people will just go, well, oh, screw it. I'm just going to keep my cable.
I think there's a lot to all the drama happening between the big players and the dislike. And yeah, this is where, again, standards and whatnot come out, open internet. Where's Kevin Marks? He would be sharing this with us.
Yes.
So,
well,
I don't know. I don't have any of these services. I have very few.
You don't have cable even?
I don't have cable. Oh, no. We got rid of cable in 2008.
So does your daughter feel like a second-class citizen when she goes to school and everybody's talking about...
Nobody in her class watches TV.
Oh, she goes to that fancy bilingual school.
That fancy. No, but they all watch YouTube. I mean, they don't
really
even...
That's really true. That's all you need. That's why I think YouTube TV has kind of an inside track with the youngins.
I don't even know if they'll want to. Like, my daughter is like, I feel sorry for people who have to watch TV shows when they're on. That's crazy. I had to explain to her, she has a friend who's out of town right now, and I had to explain to her that she could call her friend on the phone and talk to her.
What?
Because her friend doesn't currently have access to Google Hangouts.
What?
Or a phone to text her. And she's like, I was like, you could probably call in, like, her dad or someone might have a phone and she could talk to you on the phone. She's like, why would we talk on the phone?
Yeah, it's a different world.
Actually,
it's a different world.
Interesting to watch. Now, remember AT&T... acquired Time Warner, again, pipes acquiring content. And one of the things they got was HBO. Remember that right now, Netflix seems to be the dominant player in all of this over-the-top stuff. In fact, they've announced they're going to spend not $8 billion, but $11 billion over the year to both create and acquire new content. Kind of amazing. And it works for them. They get subscribers based on the originals, right?
Yeah, people talk about them. You know, you go into the office, although Stacey and I don't go to an office, but if we did, what would everybody be talking about? Whatever show was on Netflix last night, and you feel left out. You don't want to feel left out. Yeah. And you get sucked in, and then you binge. And they get a lot of subscribers with original content because it's good content.
Yeah.
It is. Oh, and I should correct this because apparently the last time I checked, I could not get YouTube TV on Roku.
But you can?
But two people are now saying that, yes, you can now. So I should revisit that. So when my dad comes up, he's got a YouTube television subscription. He wants to watch golf and he can't. So now I can tell him that he can.
That's one of the reasons YouTube TV is pretty awesome. Yeah, it is now, as of February, it's available on Roku. So that's a big deal.
How many people actually watch TV on a TV these days? Because I don't.
I do. We actually, for prefer, we'll even Chromecast YouTube.
Yeah, I don't like the little screen. I want to see it on a big screen.
See, we all want to watch different things. So it's like, I'll just grab my tablet and sit in my recliner and I'm good.
And if you think about it, if you've got good headphones or, you know, and you've, and your tablet is close enough, it's really exactly the same as if you were watching a TV 8 feet away, a larger TV 8 feet away.
Oh, well, we force ourselves to like go and watch things. And here's the big ethical debate in our house. No one can start a show without conferring with the other members of the family. So
you mean start a binge?
We start a binge. So this is my husband right now. We're all supposed to be watching Lemony Snicket together, but we kind of, Anna went and watched him without us. But
it's hard for adults to watch that actually after a while.
Oh, we handled it. And my daughter and I are watching Sabrina, Teenage Witch, which is nice.
Oh, Lord.
Hey, you got to find something.
Why don't you make her watch The Handmaid's Tale and learn something about life?
Dear Lord. She wanted to watch. She saw Children of Men or something. And she's like, what's that about? And I was like, no, honey.
No. Sabrina, Teenage Witch, good choice. Good choice.
Awesome choice.
So the new owners of HBO. So HBO is kind of, it's interesting. They have internally thought of themselves as bespoke content, that they hand make great television like The Sopranos or Game of Thrones or Westworld. It's an event. It's Sunday night. It's worked for them. They've according to the New York Times, they spent over the last, 3 years, they spent, let me get the numbers right, because it sounds like a good number. They spent $2 billion a year to make $6 billion in profit. Doesn't sound bad, right? Netflix, $11 billion in 1 year. All of a sudden, AT&T, the new guy in charge, he's in charge of all of Warner Media, John Stankey, longtime AT&T executive with a very unfortunate name, comes in, sits the folks down at HBO and says, there's a new sheriff in town. And, you know, what you're doing is not enough. We need hours a day, not hours a week, not hours a month. We need hours of viewing a day. You are competing with devices that sit in people's hands, capture their attention every 15 minutes. This is a quote because the recording of his town hall leaked. I want more hours, and this is from the New York Times. I want more hours of engagement. Why are more hours of engagement important? Because you get more data and information about a customer that then allows you to do things like monetize through alternate models of advertising as well as subscriptions, which I think is very important to play in tomorrow's world. Now, I know he didn't want this to get out. But this is the reason it got out, I would imagine, is because some HBO staff jaws dropped. This is such a shift for HBO. They want it, I can shorthand it for you, to be more like Netflix and less bespoke.
You know, I'm not terribly surprised by what he said. Yeah.
There's also Recode published the full text from the memo. So I would encourage you to go look at both of those things. Because it looks like the New York Times cherry picked some of the stuff.
Okay.
So they talked about actually bringing HBO is to be the front end of a bigger subscription business, which could include different programming. So there's that in there. And apparently he also never mentioned Netflix, but he did focus on Facebook and Amazon, which is worth thinking about too. So, and yes, do we really, like, everyone's like, the media business. And then these old, you know, he called himself a bellhead, these old telco guys. I totally see how the media business would be very snobby and not wanting part of this. And, but John Stankey, he's a smart man. This is not an idiot. This is not, I have met John Stankey on several occasions. He is technically astute. He can get down and understand a business, whether it's deep intricacies of fiber or spectrum policy. I have no doubt he can figure out the media business, and he's not gonna set HBO on fire just to make it, you know, turn out crap. I promise. So that's just me.
I would, you know, so Peter Kafka's Recode article tries to dampen out the concerns of people who love HBO the way it is, the Game of Thrones, Sopranos, Westworld fans. We already have a Netflix, thank you. We don't, you know. But his premise is that AT&T said, we're going to let all the Time Warner properties run themselves with autonomy. But I have to point out, Peter, you know better than that. That's exactly what every single company that acquires a new company says until they don't.
Right.
And almost always, in the long run, they don't. And frankly, the reason the Times article resonated is it makes perfect sense. That is, if you were going to just kind of walk into a business and not be concerned with, you know, its reputation or its current fans and what they might want, but really, how do we make this business compete in the modern world? You'd say exactly what Stanky said. So I'm not saying Stanky's dumb. I'm saying he's saying exactly, probably the right, from a business perspective, exactly the right thing. But I don't know if it's what we want HBO to be. Anyway, it's just something to pay attention to. There's no way AT&T lets HBO continue as it is. It's just not profitable enough.
It is incredibly profitable. I mean, that is incredibly profitable, especially, well, even compared to a wireless phone business. I'm like, they're doing real well.
AT&T spent $84 billion for Time Warner. They've got to justify a very expensive acquisition.
They're already boosting their fees.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, well, they said, wait a minute. No, they're not. They said they would never do that.
Did you not see the stories?
I'm kidding. That's me being facetious. Like, they said they would never, right. ever do that, but immediately they did.
Yeah. And this FCC, FTC.
Oh, yeah. They said they'd lower prices. The Time Warner merger is a synergy. See, this is, how can you be really naive about this? Every time a company wants to get regulatory approval, they say, no, the synergy is going to be good for consumers. It's going to lower profits. They tell the new company they're acquiring, don't worry, we're not going to touch you. You've got a great business. I remember this at Tech TV. Comcast said, we think Tech TV is doing a great job. We bought you because we love you, before they disassembled it.
I can't remember a single acquisition like that, a big acquisition where they promised the world and actually fulfilled that promise.
No, they never do. These things are,
I mean, not one.
Notoriously bad.
If you put conditions on it, then maybe, but otherwise, no.
Yeah.
Like merger conditions.
Anyway, to Peter Kafka's point on Recode, I'm not all upset. I kind of expected it. And you know, we live in a golden age. If you're a content creator, all you have to have is a good idea and a phone to call somebody, you're going to sell it. There's a lot of money at play. Apple's put down more than $1 billion. Amazon, I don't know how much they put into it. They spent almost $1 billion for the rights alone to The Lord of the Rings. There's a lot of money out there.
Don't get me started on that. I can't imagine that coming out in a positive way. I mean, all they can do is go down or backwards with that, in my opinion.
Oh, one word, Kevin. Prequels.
Mm-mm. No, nobody wants to see a series on the Silmarillion and Lost Tales.
Where was Gandalf all that time? You know, out with Tom Bombadil? Yeah.
I mean, Lord of the Rings soap opera? I don't think so. No.
Makes my furry toes curl. Let's take a little break when we come back, talking about the battle of the dinosaurs, the giants, Firefox, and its 4-year battle to get Google to treat it like any other browser. But first, a word from WordPress. If you are a business, if you're a person, if you, like everybody in the world owes it to themselves to have their own website. I'm not talking about a Facebook page. Mark Zuckerberg owns that. That's his website. I'm not talking about a Twitter page. That's Jack Dorsey's website. I'm talking about your own website. Maybe you say, well, I don't need that because I have Facebook or Twitter. You got to have a place that people, when they search for your business name or they search for your personal name, that's the first thing that comes up. It's the place they go where you show your best stuff. You get new customers. You position yourself. And what better way to do it than a WordPress.com? I've been a WordPress user 4 years. I moved to WordPress.com from self-hosted WordPress because I didn't want to be doing all the updates and configuring and all that stuff. I found more, I was spending more time tweaking my site than actually posting content. WordPress.com does all the coding, all the design, all the tools. They've got great support 24 hours a day, 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. They're there on weekends too. So you never have to worry about a technical problem. They take care of that for you. And it's less to have a site on WordPress.com than it is to host your own site. It's $4 a month. I actually spend a little more because I want the business account so I get the built-in SEO, the social sharing, so my fans and friends and customers can go out and share my stuff on their Facebook and Twitter. There's hundreds of great plugins. You can even, with the business plan, bring your own themes and plugins. You don't need to, though. They've got them all. I'm now using the Google AMP plugin, which means my page at leolaporte.com loads fast, much faster on mobile. There is a reason why 31% of all websites run on WordPress. Can you believe that number? Almost a third of all the websites in the world, 31% run on WordPress. WordPress is amazing. It's awesome, and you've got to try it. Go to wordpress.com/twig. Get your website started. 15% off any new plan purchase when you go to wordpress.com/twig. Please do me that favor. Try it. You're going to see. I have to pitch. I pitched my kids. My daughter said, I need to have a website because I want to put my poetry up there and my drawings. I said, okay. Got her set up, wordpress.com. My son said, he likes to take pictures. My pictures get squeezed and destroyed on Facebook. I said, Henry, when you were born, I registered your name, and I've been waiting for this day. I'm going to hand it over. And we set him up. wordpress.com/twig, 15% off right now. It's good enough for my kids. It's good enough for you. Kevin, your kids are grown.
Mostly. My son will be 21.
That's grown, dude. Got bad news for you. That's grown.
I'm going to give him a WordPress site.
Yeah. Did you have the sense 21 years ago to register his domain name?
No.
No.
I got him a social security number, and I started a college fund for him.
I did the first. I didn't do the last.
Yeah.
Because I looked into how much it would cost, how much I'd have to save, and I said, "There's no way I'm saving that much." You're going to college on your own dime, kid.
Yep.
Stacey,
yep.
Do you have a domain name for your daughter?
Of course we do. My husband is a domain name expert.
Of course. Nowadays, you shouldn't name a kid unless you can find that domain name, right?
Yeah. He actually, I think he registered all of. No, he's missing one of his nephews, but our nieces and nephews, many of them, he registered their names too.
Yeah. I feel like you almost have to do that Google search before you name your kid these days.
It's tough, man.
Hey, pro tip, when you're naming the kids, you know, if you can't find the right domain name, just look for the country codes that have the different one, you know?
Yeah. Put a .io.
.ca.
It'll be like Will I Am.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah. Will I O. I O, I O, off to work I go.
.io.
.io. What's .io is the Indian Ocean.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Libya is .ly. Mm-hmm.
Bit.ly. Yep.
Yep. There's some fun ones. .tv is Tuvalu. .fm. Right. I can't remember.
Tuvalu.
This is the island that's sinking, but makes a lot of money.
They're losing.
On .tv. I have .am, which is Armenia. I have leo.am. That's a pretty good domain. I don't want to lose that one.
One of my favorites is Peter Rojas's.
What's his?
I have to look it up because I can't remember exactly what it is, but it's, I believe it's roj.as.
roj.as, it is.
Right?
Nice.
Which is for what? What country is AS?
Austria? AS.
I do not know.
It's easy enough.
Where's Andrew? Andrew would know.
AS Nick is American Samoa.
There you go.
That's a good one.
Cookies.
Is there a .te? I could be Lapore dot. Is there an .eo? I could be L.eo.
Oh, you can't have a single letter.
And I was chagrined because Leo.com was taken by the Royal Bank of Canada for their mascot, Leo. Mm. And then they let it. I gave up. I thought, oh well, they'll never give that up. They gave it up. and some squatter got it.
Oh.
If I had just been watching.
Never, ever, ever give up.
Never give up. Firefox.
I'm watching the one in India, kev.in.
Oh, wouldn't that be good?
Oh, someone has it. I'm watching it.
Oh, you're watching it.
I have for about 10 years now.
Yeah, Kev.
It's like watching paint dry.
Yeah, that's the problem. FM is the Federated States of Micronesia. So I have leo.fm as well. Firefox and the four-year battle to get Google to treat it like a first-class citizen. Firefox has gotten better and better, by the way. It's gone through that bad time when it was really a pig, and it's really fast, and I've actually started using it a lot. It turns out that Firefox doesn't work as well on Google Pages. The Google flagship search page, Firefox, doesn't even have the toolbar. You know, you can narrow searches by date. Google Flights occasionally will block Firefox. Sometimes will just give you a degraded version. Google's explanation for this? We're focused on providing a great experience for search across browsers and continue to work to improve this for all users. Firefox uses the Gecko engine. Everybody else uses WebKit now, right? Firefox uses the Gecko engine, which requires us to do extensive testing on all of our features to ensure compatibility because it's different from WebKit, which is used by Chrome and Safari and UC and Opera. We've done this for Firefox Desktop, but not have done the same level of testing for mobile. Come on, Google. That's a really mealy-mouthed response. How hard can it be?
I agree with you. How hard can it be? And I don't know. I'm looking at the two comparison images right now, and I get it. I mean, if you're on a phone and you're using whatever browser and you go to Google and you don't get the results or you can't manipulate them the way you want or move around the page, you know, you're not going to blame the browser. You're going to blame the company providing the information.
That's a good
probably
point.
Unfairly.
Yeah, that's a good point. So on the left is a Chrome version of the Google search for World Cup. On the right is the Firefox mobile version. Funny thing is, the Firefox mobile on iOS uses WebKit. I think it does on Android as well. So it's not even Gecko.
Yeah.
Do you think it's anti-competitive or you think it's, I mean, it's, I think it's anti-competitive. I'm sorry.
I think that's
probably
part of it.
Thumb in their nose. I mean, because also look at how, well, never mind.
Every time I use Firefox on Windows, Chrome bitches at me when I go to a Google page. Microsoft bitches at me when I go to Microsoft. You should be using Edge. You should be using Chrome. You should be using Edge. Why? Please stop the bickering.
Part of it, though, is if you look at the Google search results in Chrome, you've got these Google cards, right? Is that really the use of a web standard? No, it's the way Google wants
Google.
Them to be shown.
Right.
So now they can say, well, look, that doesn't look as good because we have these nice flashy cards that just get you right to the information. So I'm not too keen on this whole thing personally with what Google's doing.
It does.
And Mozilla keeps yelling at Google about everything. Mozilla's yelling at everybody about everything. So
that's a good point. This is kind of Mozilla's thing too. Yeah, the folks behind Firefox, yeah. According to the Washington Post, Google may have some big issues coming up in Europe, not over this, although that could also be a cause for further action, but Google may be getting fined billions this month from European regulators for forcing its search and web browsing tools on the makers of Android smartphones. So Google's already got a big fine over the shopping thing, over favoring, according to the EU, Google sites over competitors' sites. What was that fine? It was a lot of money. And now they're facing maybe even a larger fine over what the EU sees as anti-competitive measures against people who are trying to use Android without using Google.
This reminded me of the Microsoft EU fine, or like I was not ever covering that directly, but it seemed related, the same arguments being made that you can't download one app without downloading the whole thing. So I didn't know if that was a better parallel.
It's similar, but it's different in that this is not the users downloading something. This is the handset makers signing a contract with Google for what they call GMS, Google Mobile Services. And they have to have all of the Google apps in order to do that. You know, there's no picking and choosing. That's the contract. So it's similar, but it's different because it's not consumers who are making the choice here. You know, it's the handset makers that force the choice on the consumers.
The EU says device makers like HTC and Samsung face an anti-competitive choice. Set Google Search as the default search service. Offer Google's Chrome browser or lose access to Android's App Store. That's part of the Google services. Without the App Store, you got to make your own. And you may well not have the millions of apps that Google offers. So really, there is a pretty big stick.
And it's really terrible for end consumers because the Google App Store does things to enforce some security that generic app stores may not. That's a big risk for users.
Right. So potentially a fairly large fine to add to that $2.7 billion fine they got last year. They're appealing that fine, and I imagine they'd appeal this one. See, if Jeff were here, I'm sure he'd have something to say in this. But he's not, so there.
I wish I could argue here, but I've got really no great arguments.
Yeah, it's hard for Google. I'll try to play somewhere in between Jeff and you guys. It's hard for Google because Apple isn't faced with the same issue because nobody else makes iOS phones, so they don't. There's no necessity to strong arm anybody. Google did the right thing. They made Android open source. So it means any manufacturer, including, by the way, Amazon, can take the Android code, make their own version of Android, which Amazon has done with Fire, and distribute it. Google has one little thing that they do, which is, well, okay, but if you want the App Store, you got to take, you know, Gmail, you got to take Chrome, you got to make the default search engine be Google. And that doesn't seem unfair. That seems like a reasonable thing. It's all bundled together. If you don't care about the App Store, look, we've made Android available free for you to use. It's free. And it's why so many things run Android. Because it's free.
And you can install, or sideload the Android apps. You know, get them from Google Play, of course. You get them from somewhere else. And there is security risks, as Stacey had mentioned. The safest place would be through the Play Store. But if you don't have access to it, you can still get those Android apps.
You used to be able to, when I would install a ROM on my Android device, you would the ROMs would not come with Google services, but you would download G-Apps or something, a separate file. Is that illegal or is that legal? Is that okay? You would think Google would say fine because you're going to be using our services now.
You would think so. I almost don't want to answer because that's exactly what I did to the Amazon Fire HD 10 tablet that I have. So.
Right.
Kevin's going to end the show, go back and find it wiped. Ah.
So it's funny because Apple didn't face this just by being closed source and saying, nope,
so
proprietary.
This is part
Google's
of an argument about the nature of anti-competitiveness in kind of a software-driven world. Like, how far can you go when you could make the point where, I mean, the point that antitrust people are looking at is, well, you buy an Apple phone or a Google phone, fine. You know, you can get, those are apples to apples, no pun intended. On the software side, there's a bunch of people clamoring for Android because the other's so closed off. So where do we draw the line? And I think it's going to be a harder and harder decision to make, especially when we start thinking about how data, the ability to collect data, is going to influence the services you're able to offer. So looking at something like, is it going to be anti-competitive in a few years for like Google Photos to be so good because they have access to all of this data? I don't know.
I'm not a lawyer. I'm looking on Quora, and somebody else who says I'm not a lawyer says it's almost certainly legal to do what Kevin did. You just change a switch in the settings on your Fire tablet, and you click a link, and you download the Google Play services in the Play Store. And frankly, why would Google try to stop that? Because you're saying I want to use your services.
Exactly.
That if you're Samsung and you want to pre-install the Google Store, you have to sign the agreement with Google that you're going to do all those things. And that's what the EU is upset about. I don't know. I feel like Google should be allowed to do this because they did the right thing, which is they allowed Android to be given away for free. So that's not exactly as strongly worded as Jeff Jarvis might have had it, but I think I've somewhat represented the Jarvis position. Let's take a little break and have more. What is for dinner tonight, Stacey? We're going to have something delicious.
Oh, no, we're eating out tonight. Sorry.
That's delicious. That's delicious.
Oh, that's true.
You live in Austin, Texas.
There, yes. There will be tacos.
There will be tacos. There will be. Kevin, remind me, where do you hang your hat?
In between Philadelphia and Quakertown in Pennsylvania.
Oh, so you can go out and get a nice, hot, soft pretzel dipped in butter.
I don't need the butter, but yes.
I'm looking at you. You need the butter, dude. You need to fatten up a little bit.
No,
flesh out
there.
That Liverpool Football Club tattoo. Give it some, swell it out there a little bit.
The problem is for my pretzels, it's just a 10-minute walk down the street. Oh. I don't get enough exercise to get the pretzel from, well, I won't say from where, because last time that was a whole debacle.
Why? What happened? Did you?
Wawa.
Huh?
You remember Wawa? The store?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no, that we were going on and on about Wawa, and I felt so bad.
What's bad about Wawa?
Oh, nothing.
I mustn't
absolutely
have been
nothing.
Here.
It's awesome. No, yeah. You were there. Jeff was saying how wonderful it is. And then we started looking up how many stores they had and the East Coast.
And we got sucked into the Wawa discussion.
We went down the Wawa rabbit hole.
Oh, man. Kevin, we go down all kinds of rabbit holes. That's all we do.
Is like, your show that you guys do, is it a little bit more structured and directed?
We try to focus only on IoT. There's some singing. Kevin does.
Not by me.
Not by Kevin. Never by Kevin. So
Stacey sings?
Oh, yeah.
Gosh, yeah. Every
super
week.
Cheery.
Usually, she doesn't realize that I've been recording all her singing, you know, for 3 years now, unbeknownst to her. And we're going to have a greatest hits podcast one time. You'll hear Stacey.
Can we have ringtones of Stacey singing?
No problem.
Best thing I ever had.
My business.
In my life, I think, one of the best things, I was in a farmer's market in Philly, and there was a Pennsylvania Dutch booth, young lady with a little lace cap, fresh, hot, big pretzel with salt, and she dipped it in melted butter, and I took one bite, and I said, I'm moving to Philadelphia. In fact, I'm moving in with you, young lady. It was the best thing I ever had in my life. Oh, my God, was that good.
You might have to give up electricity to do that. I don't know.
I hear the Amish these days are very technology focused.
I don't know.
No,
it's a good. They could well be. I mean, I still see the carts and the horses every once in a while. And we just moved my stepdaughter out to Kutztown University, which is
Kutztown.
About 45. About 45 minutes northwest of us, and it looked like the Amish World Series. A bunch of guys playing baseball. I mean, I was, you know, they're all over. I don't know how technically savvy they are.
Well, let me just refer you to this NPR story from a few years back. Amish community, not anti-technology, just more thoughtful. Here's one of their three-horse buggies. They all have electric lights powered by rechargeable batteries. One even has electric windshield wipers.
Nice.
One Amish man in Lancaster County, PA, checks his voicemail about four times a day. His shop is equipped with a propane-powered forklift, hydraulic-powered saws, cordless drills, and a refrigerated tank where milk from the dairy cows is stored. So they don't consider themselves anti-technology.
Good.
Just careful.
Good.
Yeah, they'll
be driving Teslas.
Yeah. Maybe that's the new Amish mode on Android P.
There we go.
You can only check your voicemail four times a week.
Oh, I never check my voicemail. That'd be fine.
Who checks their voicemail ever?
You know, the notification stays at the top of your thing, and it drives me nuts. So twice a month, I'll check my voicemail.
That's your carrier.
I know.
It's very annoying. You have AT&T, I bet.
I have Verizon.
Verizon, even worse. Mm-hmm.
Same difference.
Yeah. Very annoying.
And their voicemail, their voicemail is so archaic, it drives me absolutely bonkers. I'm like, come on, you guys. Do you really want to charge me? I think it's like $3 a month for
visual
voicemail.
Yeah, voicemail. Yeah, T-Mobile does the same thing. It's crazy.
Come on, people.
Crazy. So,
I refuse.
Well, whatever kind of... Go ahead.
Go Google Fi.
Oh, Yeah. Well, I have a Google Voice number, but yeah, I ask people in my message not to leave a voicemail.
Yeah.
But doctors do, you know, all those people. Ah.
I do. Okay. She never gets back to me.
I could make this my pick of the week, actually. It might be something you'd like. So I was a big Jabber fan way back.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Everybody was, until Google said, oh, we were going to deprecate it, blah, blah, blah. But it was a really, I thought, a great chat protocol. It could be much more than chat. It supported XML, and it was very extensible. Well, I found this interesting service, jump.chat, jmp.chat. And it gives you a real phone number. You can choose your area code. You can use it as a Jabber phone number, so you can send texts. People can call it, but they can't talk to you. They can only leave a message, which then appears in your inbox as a playable WAV file and text. And so I created a phone number. It's a bit of a process. You can try it free for 30 days, and then it's $35 a year or $3 a month. So what you do is you create a Jabber ID on this site in Germany called dismail.de, and that can be anything. You're not really going to use that publicly. There are Jabber clients for all the mobile platforms. I'm using Conversations on Google Play. Then I imagine they're using Twilio or something like it, but you can get a number for jump.chat. And when you give out that number, you put it on your business cards. But this way, people call, you can't talk to them. They don't leave one of those unusable, you know, call this number, press 7 to delete, 8 to listen or save. They leave a text message in this Jabber client. So you can have like a separate messaging client that's just for texts, phone messages to this special number. So I immediately did this, and so for $35 a year, I have a 4-way. It's not quite Google Voice. It's an interesting. It's kind of an alternative thing. I thought this was really really great. I set this up yesterday. JMP.chat. It's a Java messaging for phones, I guess, is what JMP stands for.
Stacey, we could use that for CES planning and just give everybody all that phone number. We never have to talk to anybody again.
I plan to use this when I make appointments, when I put it on your business card. For your show, you could create a special number that people could leave messages, that you'd have the audio, you could play back. You can read the text. I mean, it seems to be exactly the same capability of transcription as Google's, Fi or Voice.
Maybe we should do that, Kevin, for the Kevin's maybe in the midst should. Of a
technical challenge.
Oh, you're trying to write this in Python, dude?
I already did. not this. No,
Twilio. Twilio will give you the back end for all that stuff.
Exactly. That's what I did. I took Twilio and Python, and I made our IoT voicemail hotline, right?
How long did that take you?
A day or two, I'll say. I don't know. It was a year ago, so it was a while ago.
It works. And you own it.
It works. Yeah. Yeah, but I run it on a Raspberry Pi.
Nice.
Which is fine. But when the dog decides, when Norm says, I'm going to go chew on this cord. And pull the power. Exactly. Or the internet's out. So I just moved it over to Google Cloud, and what I thought was going to be free isn't free. So now I'm going to go to AWS.
Well, here's the other thing. You can send unlimited text messages from that number. So what you could do is have it an IoT number that you say, leave us a message or whatever. And if you want to be on our mailing list, send us a message. And then you can add that to a contact list and send out messages to everybody. Should I give out that number and my number and see what happens?
Hey.
What could possibly go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong?
I'll give out my here. Let me see. I can't remember it now. It's a 415 number, which I don't have a 415 number, and I thought I should have a 415 number.
Makes you look legit.
Makes you look too legit to quit. Let me open Conversations because that's my Jabber client. Oh, I never set it up on here. I got it on this phone. Too many phones.
I was just thinking how I can't find my phone. So. opposite problem.
Clearly not Amish. The phone number.
Let's let the telethon begin.
Yeah.
This is actually a good test, isn't it? This is a good test.
I don't hear those phones ringing.
415-604. I got to give out the right number, though. If I give out the wrong number, I'm going to
upset. Someone's going to hate
Somebody's
you.
Somebody's not going to be happy at all. 415-604-1630, I'm pretty sure. Let me verify that. Crap. I can't. Yeah. 1360. Oops. 415-604-1360. 415. Everybody call that number right now. 415-604-1360. Leave a message. Send it. You could text it. You could MMS it. It's using Jabber, but you don't have to use a Jabber client. You can use any SMS client. You can call that number. Now, you don't get a voicemail message. You just get, when you call the number, you get a beep. It goes, boop. But I think most people are conditioned if they hear boop to start talking. It would be nice if you could say, hi, this is Kevin Toefel, and this is Stacey Higginbotham. I want to sing a song, but instead, why don't you leave us a message?
Or which you is could just very Stacey close to the that. One we have.
It is. We recorded an MP3, and we just host that off Twilio, and...
We can change it whenever we want.
All right,
we can make it seasonally specific.
Chat room wants to know. 415-604-1360. And we'll see.
The lines are open.
The lines are open. I've done this many, many times. Because, you know, all of this stuff is cheap and easy now.
Yeah.
Thanks to Twilio, probably, is the back end for most of this stuff. It's really kind of neat. How much is a Twilio account for a phone number?
Oh, it's very inexpensive.
Yeah.
It's...
I figure it's less than $35 a year because that's what I'm paying Jump.
Yeah. I think we pay like 0.3 of a penny for every incoming call or something like that. It's ridiculous.
Oh, no. See, this is all, at this point, I think it's free.
Yeah.
God, I hope so.
Oh, God. Hey, everybody, call me and leave long
messages. What have I done? So we're going to talk Chromebooks in a second, of course, because Kevin is the Chromebook wizard and Crostini. I'm loving it. But first, a word from... LastPass. LastPass works great on your Chromebook. It works great on your Android phone, your iOS, your Windows, your Mac, your Linux. That's one of the reasons I use LastPass everywhere. Every one of my passwords is in LastPass. I only have to remember the LastPass password. It unlocks and autofills everywhere I am. It generates long, strong passwords. It helps me do a security checkup so that I don't have the same password again and again on site after site. Look, this is clearly the answer to the password conundrum, and everybody has it, especially if you're in business. If you think of it, if you think of the problem that a business faces, because we've had that problem. We had an engineer put all of the passwords on a website so that he could easily get to, but so could everybody else. That's when we set up LastPass Enterprise. LastPass Enterprise means that everybody in the enterprise can have access to the passwords they need. You can actually share passwords without them even seeing it. So they don't. You can change it. It's automatically changed for them. You can assign roles so only certain people have access to certain things. Your employees don't have to write passwords down, remember them. It just works. Over 81% of all the breaches we hear about every day are caused by weak or reused passwords. That's why 13 million people trust LastPass. 33,000 businesses use LastPass. We've been using LastPass for a couple of years. And one of the things I believe in it so much that we do for all our employees is we give them a LastPass personal account as well so that they are protected in their regular life too. That's how important it is. When you use LastPass Enterprise, you can control your password policies. For instance, we require two-factor. You don't have to use two-factor to use LastPass, but we require it of our employees. We can have automatic, and this is for our employees, we do this, I think every 6 months, all the passwords reset. So that way, if an employee leaves and we forget to change or whatever, it's nice to you. All the password requirements are up to you too. We make sure that they use long master passwords. You can restrict access to specific devices and locations. So, for instance, when I was in Japan, I couldn't at first log in because it said, your LastPass is set to be used in Petaluma. What are you doing in Japan?
So I had to jump through some extra hoops, which is, I was glad. I said, okay, in this case, for the next 3 weeks, Japan's okay. That's the kind of thing you want. Configure over 100 policies, access security reports, create shared folders, organize database logins, SSH keys, software licenses. It's not just passwords. I use LastPass Notes to keep all of the documents, you know, our EIN number, social security numbers, payroll information. It's all secure. Its data is encrypted and decrypted at the device level. Data stored in the vault is always secret, even from LastPass. Even from LastPass. So this is the right way to go. You and your employees could take the LastPass security challenge. So it tells you where there's weaknesses so you can fix them. It's the first thing we did in the business. We made sure all the passwords were strong and long and compliant. So there's LastPass for all sorts of users. LastPass Premium for personal use. LastPass Families for the family. LastPass Teams for teams of 50 or fewer. LastPass Enterprise for the business, as that's what we use. At work and at home, fix your password woes with LastPass. It's the number one most preferred password manager. And it's really a big part of our business. It has been for years. And I've used LastPass forever, practically since they started. Steve Gibson interviewed Joe Segrist. Joe was very kind, let him look at all the code. Steve gave it his seal of approval, started using LastPass. That was some years ago. We love it. LastPass.com/twit. Find out more. Get signed up and get your business signed up. Because if you think about it, if your bookkeeper has access to your QuickBooks and has the password, if he or she leaves, they still have the password. LastPass.com/twit. You better protect that stuff. LastPass.com/twit. We're very grateful to LastPass for keeping all our stuff safe and secure. So Kevin is the Chromebook guy. I'm really pleased that you started this website, Kevin. That's fantastic.
It was a good time, actually. I mean, I've been working with Chromebooks since day one when they first started, and I got away from them and had some free time, and just one weekend in March said, yeah, let me start up a blog on Chromebooks. And it was perfect timing. There's so much innovation coming right now between hardware, software. It's perfect.
About Chromebooks.com.
Nice and simple.
And you were the one who told me about Christina. You can see you've got a most recent article is what are the good Linux apps to install?
Yeah, that's a question I get from a lot of people who are not using Christina. And for those who don't know, Christina is a Google project to bring full Linux apps to Chromebooks, even Chrome boxes, any Chrome OS device, actually. And the question I get is, well, when I can do the Christina stuff on the stable channel, because it's in dev now, the dev channel, what do I install? And I'm like, you know what? That's a great question. So everybody's different. I mean, I put some IDEs for coding on mine. I put Skype on mine. It's not working yet because there's no audio support. But, you know, people maybe don't want those, but maybe you want, I don't know. I ended up finding a wiki of finding Windows or Linux equivalents of Windows apps, thinking maybe that'll help people. So
this is so much better than what Microsoft has done with their Linux subsystem, because it's real Linux. It's Debian on here.
Correct.
And so I am now, I'm a little concerned, but I'll talk about it in a little bit. But I install immediately, you know, Git and Keybase and all the stuff, it's command line only, all the command line stuff. And as you can see, Emacs, and I installed SpaceMax, the Haskell compiler, the Python interpreter, all the stuff that I use day in, day out. And what it does, it's kind of interesting. It you know, a Chromebook as configured is really kind of a safe, secure device for limited use, for people who don't need Photoshop or, you know, 3D design tools, stuff like that. Although I have to say, with Adobe Fuse, which is a video editor that's coming soon to Chrome OS, this might be changing. But what's interesting is the middle stuff is not what I'm worried about. The fact that I can use Linux in the command line is huge for me. This makes this like my go-to computer now. And if you have if you have a fairly fast computer, how does the Christina work on the slower machines?
It depends. I would say not as good. If you're going to do this, you probably want at least a Core i3 processor. Even 4 gig of RAM is pushing it, I believe. You know, that's what this HP Chromebook X2 is that I have, and it's working. But it's a good step behind the Pixelbook. And then once you start into the $200 and $300 Chromebooks, I don't know. I mean, we're asking an awful lot of that hardware at that point.
I just as a kind of a give you an idea, Emacs I run on every box, all the Macs box, all the Linux boxes. And normally Emacs, I will run it as a daemon, which you can do, which is interesting on Christini. So it could stay in the background and load pretty fast because that initial load is slow. I've never really found it that slow on most machines. On this, it's 8 seconds because I have Space Max and 160 packages. There's a lot to load. And that 8 seconds feels long. So it is one of those things where it's not going to be as snappy as a dedicated Linux box or even Mac OS running a command line.
No, the funny thing is you mentioned it's all command line to install your packages and hitting the repositories to install apps. There's code changes that Google is working on actual installing of Debian packages.
Oh, nice. Well, yeah. I use apt. You can use, you know, apt-get install anything in the Debian repositories. Which version of is this Stretch? What's on here?
This is Stretch.
Stretch, okay.
Yep. I think because that's the long-term support one.
It's stable. It's the stable branch.
That's it.
Yeah, and that's what you want because you don't – but it keeps – you can update it. I mean, every time I launch it, and I put the terminal in my menu bar, so it's very easy. Just click the terminal. It's launched. I'm running Bash right now. I'll probably switch that over to Fish, my preferred command line tool. You know, sudo apt update, sudo apt upgrade, and all your apps are updated just as you would expect on any Linux box. I like it. I like it a lot. It really makes a Chromebook a lot more useful. For somebody like you, you want to use Python, you don't have to log into a Raspberry Pi with SSH anymore. You could just do it on your Chromebook.
Exactly. And the thing is, you had noted how secure the Chromebooks are because, you know, everything is from top to bottom handled by Google. It's got the TPM chip in the devices. The way they've done this, I don't feel they've compromised security at all because this is all a sandboxed container.
And your secure boot's still turned on. You don't disable that. You don't have to run in developer mode. That raises the one concern. I don't want to spend too much. That's one of the reasons I'm using Space Max. Usually I use a custom Emacs configuration that's very complicated. And I don't want to invest a lot of time in setting this up because I'm worried that it's, you know, at some point I'm going to power wash it and I have to do the whole thing over again.
That's a valid concern, but, and I don't have the information handy right now, but I will look it up and maybe you can add it to the show notes. You can take snapshots of the containers and then basically image them and then restore them. So
that's exactly what I want.
Yeah, because this is for people who are interested in the nitty-gritty. If you take a look, it's LXC and LXC is one of the components here, and it's been in Linux forever. And there's a lot of tools and ways to use it, and that's what Google is using to create the container. So
is it a cheroot like Crouton was? Or
I don't believe so.
Okay.
I don't believe
LXC
so.
LXC is a container technology, like Docker.
Yep.
So that's nice. So it's running in a container, which I could then snapshot and restore. So I would snapshot it and save it somewhere. You want to save it securely because you've got, like, I have all my GPG keys in here and all that. I save my .dot files. I have a secure Git repository with my .dot files. I guess I could just do that. But it would be nice, much nicer if I don't have to reinstall it, if I just had it in a container and I could. That would be really nice. Yeah,
there's so much going on with this. This is always changing. Every week I find five new things that are happening or coming, and it's really exciting right now.
When will it
it's
be
almost
in the,
hard to keep up with.
When will it be in the regular channel, in the standard stable?
So it was going to be in stable 68, but then they pushed it back to 69.
That's soon.
It is soon, but again, it's also only on certain devices.
Right.
Because of the Linux kernel that they use and so on and so forth. But so, Stacey, if you get a Chromebook, get one with Linux kernel 4.4. That's all I can tell you.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to ask you until like six months from now.
Does your daughter use Chromebooks in school?
No, they use MacBooks.
MacBooks. Wow. That's nice, actually. But expensive for the parents.
Well, she has my old computer.
Right.
And then I bought a new computer. She might get this one or I might just get her a Chromebook.
Right.
She doesn't get to keep her school computer. And everything's on Google. So you just log in and you've got everything.
This this Pixelbook is awfully nice, but it's expensive. It's I got the base model, which is $1,000.
It's pretty. I'm watching you fling that thing around, and
it's
like,
so light.
It's nice.
So you don't mind carrying around? It comes with a pencil, so I don't do any illustration. But if a kid wanted to, this is a really well made.
I'm buying my child a $1,000 computer.
I don't blame you. Look what it does, though. I was watching the World Cup on it, and the fact that I can, you know, tent it like that makes it really great for watching TV. No, I really like this.
I think Best Buy still has them. I think Best Buy still has them for about $720 to $750 right now.
That's attractive.
Model. Yeah,
that's very attractive.
Considering the Chromebook X2 was $600.
So, what is Google's? It's kind of futile to ask this. It's like asking what is Google's messaging strategy. What is Google's Chrome OS strategy? Because it's a little confusing. You had Chrome OS, then you added Android Store to it. Now you've got Linux on it. It's all over the place. What is it?
One OS to rule them all. I don't know, until they figure out what they're doing with Fuchsia, and I don't know really much about Fuchsia, so I won't go there. This is their way to say, look, we used to be the platform that was safe, secure, and you were limited to web apps. We thought that was good, but maybe some people didn't. Guess what? Now we have probably the most apps available on our computers because we have Linux, we have Android, and we have web.
Fuchsia, which is yet another operating system from Google, but you know it takes a while to develop an operating system from scratch.
The last one took me 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it?
It's a lot of time.
That kernel will get you every time. So Linux was the kernel for both Android and for Chrome OS. So that kind of they didn't really have to develop from scratch. Fuchsia, they're doing from scratch, and they've been working on it for at least 5 years. I think it's going to be a year or two more, I would guess, but maybe not. Did you ever install Fuchsia? Because you can install it.
You can. I didn't. I saw Ron Amadio do it, and when I saw how little you could do with it, I'm like, thanks, Ron.
Exactly.
Thanks, Ron. You saved me some time.
Yeah.
And I could be wrong. Stacy, have we ever heard about Fuchsia being part of some embedded platforms, or am I confusing with something else?
I think you're confusing it with
Brillo and Weave, called? Maybe.
Zircon?
I think it's Zircon. No, I don't think
Andromeda.
We have not talked about Fuchsia being part of embedded stuff.
All right. Maybe okay. I'm confusing with the Android things or something right now.
So,
which was Brillo?
According to a Tech Radar, Google Fuchsia is a hybrid OS comprised of two distinct but connected user interfaces: a phone-centric one codenamed Armadillo, and a traditional desktop UI named Capybara. This is actually from a 9to5 Google. That makes sense because if you're Google and you're going to develop from scratch, you want one that's going to work on Android devices and you want one that's going to work on Chromebooks.
I lied to you, Kevin. They did say that it could work on embedded devices, that it was going to work on everything.
Everything.
So, yes.
Wow.
God, that was all the way back in like 2016. No wonder I don't remember.
Good Lord. Yeah.
You're right, Kevin.
Microkernel. I seem to remember a microkernel for Fuchsia that they were going to use for that. But
they have been gradually transferring people over. Earlier this year, the former head of Android platform security, Nick Kralovich, went to define security of the Fuchsia's department. That means, well, of course, if you're building an OS today from the ground up, you got to do security from the ground up. But it may be a little bit farther along than just a laboratory project. But knowing how long it takes to develop an operating system from scratch, knowing what state it was in when Ron Amadio installed it just earlier this year, I think it's a ways off. And so until then, you have this beast with three backs that's the Chrome OS, you know?
Yeah, but you know what? A lot of people are complaining about Chromebooks are getting too complex now because of all these additions and Chrome.
Yeah.
Well, it can be. You don't need to enable Linux apps right off the bat. That's a setting. You don't turn on.
Or
you
Android.
Don't need to enable, exactly. Google Play Store. Turn it off. And you still have the same Chromebook that you've always had. I don't think people realize
you
that.
You get the choice.
Google's not forcing this.
Just like putting Linux on Windows, Google's trying to do the same thing Microsoft did, which is to appeal to a certain group of people, sysadmins and others, who really wouldn't consider Chrome OS. But now you can have a good terminal, You can, you know, you can have all the pen testing tools, command line stuff. You could put, you know, any, you know, Wireshark or anything you want to put on there will work. I presume, I don't know, but I presume you have access to the networking stack and all of that stuff. Is it, how isolated is it from the hardware?
I think it's still pretty isolated. In fact, I mean, because they're still working on a lot of the hardware components. There's no graphic GPU acceleration, for example, and audio.
And you really wouldn't want to put any X window stuff on it at all. It's not powerful enough or fast enough for graphical interfaces.
Yeah, especially if you're going to have this run across a range of Chromebooks that, you know, some might be. I mean, there some of the ARM-based ones actually support it already.
Yeah.
You know?
So I'm curious what you guys think of this story. I just was reading about it on Reddit. Marcus Brownlee did a review of the OnePlus 6. And by the way, the red OnePlus 6 is coming out. And then tweeted that he was a little perturbed at OnePlus because they took his video review on YouTube and are running it as an ad.
Oh. No, 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 no.
No. So he has no control over it?
Well, then, so there's a whole thread back and forth. And at some point, the folks from YouTube said, no, no one can do that without your permission. We should talk. Now, at this point, that sounds like if Marquez wanted it to be pulled down, he could. He does point out it's his most viewed video ever. So he says basically he was without his permission. Google says, well, you can't turn an ad video into an ad without the creator's consent. So now,
is it a setting that maybe he had and that he didn't? Because I can totally.
I think you have to explicitly ask permission. Certainly in the real world. If somebody were going to take my review from here and put it on their website, they would be required to ask.
Well, you know, sometimes people pull review content from, like, I know that when I was writing at Fortune, people would sometimes pull our review content for their advertising. But
there's,
it's like
fair
those,
use. So you
yeah,
could,
they would pull like a statement from my review.
Yeah, and I don't even like that when people do that. Occasionally they do that and I will complain and make them take it down. But yeah, you see that in movie reviews all the time. You know, Siskel and Ebert, two thumbs up. That's not, you don't have to ask permission to do that, I would guess.
So, where's the advertising revenue going? Which account? I mean, if it's going to Marquez's,
no,
then we would know.
It's not.
But it sounds like it's not.
It's going to one, it's just, it's no, there's no revenue. It is an ad.
OnePlus put his video and is using that to run an advertisement.
Right.
But if I'm Marquez, I'm upset. In fact, I would say if I were Marquez, if it had happened to me, I would have, it would be gone because that's an implicit endorsement. And of course, a complete conflict of interest because he, now I go even the extra step. We don't generally review stuff unless we buy it. So like I bought this Pixel book, I bought this iPhone, I bought this Pixel 2 because I don't want to even have a review unit. But most people, and that's a completely normal process, have review units as long as you send them back. You know, there's not a problem with that. Although the other day Marquez showed his drawer of phones. Apparently he does not send them back because he has a drawer with at least 500 phones in it. So that's a little weird, too. Marcus, you should send those back. That would be the right thing to do on those. I don't know. I'm curious. I don't know who to blame on this one. If the ad's still up, then at this point, I think you have to say Marquez probably is liking the traffic. He's not making any money on it.
But we're all old, so.
Yeah. YouTube standards are very different, aren't they?
I don't even know anymore.
And I don't even know what's allowed.
I mean, we send our stuff back with the except. Now, there are a couple of exceptions. There are things that I think we've purchased most of it, but there are a few things that I have that I keep because they continually update.
Right. It's like an ongoing.
Right.
Like
review.
Yes.
Long term.
But I think maybe either my Wink or my SmartThings hub is an ongoing review unit. However, the others are all, one of the hubs is, but I don't remember which one anymore.
And by the way, I shouldn't say that Marcus, I thought Marcus was getting these sent to him to review, but maybe he's buying them. Maybe that's why his phone drawer is so full. Maybe he
then
is
I would think
them.
You'd sell them. But I mean, you'd use them, sell them, and you know,
well, see,
plow it back.
If you buy them, you should sell them. If you don't, if you're giving them as a review unit, even if, and sometimes companies do this. Well, we don't. When somebody offers us a review unit, our standard policy is to say, fine, but you must send a return label, and we will return it within 2 weeks of the finality of the review. And we insist on that, and you have to pay for return shipping. And then in that case, we'll review it. Because I don't want, first of all, anybody who does, this is the problem. This is just, this is a minor. I remember John C. Dvorak, I've told this story before, who was at the time writing a column a day. He was in 30 different magazines. And basically, he was so powerful in the industry. This is in the 90s. Everybody sent him everything. I remember going to his house once. He had a laptop on every step of his stair, going up his stair. He had in his living room, he'd been going through his stuff, a pile of boxes of software that they were going to sell or throw away or dispose of. And then I said, you know, John, I need a modem. He said, ah, come with me. And he was renting a space above a gas station that was like Fibber McGee's closet. You open the door and you had a, you had a, and he said, all right, there are a bunch of modems in here. Let's see. What do you want? So he was, he couldn't be bothered to send them back. And you know, if you don't have a staff, I understand that, but.
Oh yeah. That's, it's, I mean, we're a small operation and that's,
that's why I insist on a mailing label. Cause then I just keep the box. Slap the label back on it, and UPS comes and gets it.
That is how we roll.
I would like to, let me just say this. Marquez and everybody who does reviews, the Linus Tech Tips, all these people, publish an ethics statement. Put it on a website.
We should probably do that.
Everybody should do that.
I have a disclosure on mine.
Yeah.
Explains all that.
Yeah. You know, Kara Swisher is my role model in this. Because she was for a while married to a woman who worked was an executive at Google, so she has a very extensive, statement. And I think that would be a good thing for us all to do. And we don't have one because you know the last one I had was Jim Lauterbach wrote one for everybody, and we all had to sign it. You know, I'll write one. I think that's a good thing. I haven't done it either. But we'll write one just so people know where you stand.
Ta-da.
Ta-da.
Okay, what are we going to talk about next?
You ready for Prime Day?
Ooh, I am.
Do you buy on Prime Day?
Not really. If there's something exciting to buy. I've never been excited about Prime Day. There's never like anything that I'm like, holy mackerel, I need that.
It's now Amazon Prime 36 hours. So big, one day couldn't hold it all.
I actually wait for it, like, when I lost my Kindle earlier this year, one of my mini Kindle losses of this year, I was like, oh, I'll wait till Prime Day because they know the Kindle will be on sale. But then they put it on sale for, like, National Book Month or something, right. So I got it then.
So they that's the best thing to buy on Prime Day for sure is Echoes, Kindles, that kind of thing. It's coming, by the way. Second half of Monday and all of Tuesday of next week, July 16th and 17th.
I kind of feel like it's like a flea market of all the stuff they can't get rid of in the warehouse.
What do you mean? You think they can't get rid of the TRT travel, the turtle travel pillow? You don't think they can? You don't think
they? I saw a 12 pack of pumpkin.
Pumpkin?
Like canned pumpkin for like an absurd deal. And I was like, what?
12 pack? You're in a pumpkin coming out your butt. Oh, wait a minute. That's a lot of pumpkin.
I know.
Up to. Oh, look, your chance to win a $50,000 Lexus ES with Alexa built in. Now, how much would you pay? Popular movies, $1.99, 30% off selected Amazon devices. Now, I always go to the wire cutter because they do a good thing. They must hate Prime Day. It's all hands on deck. It just must because they're there and they're just comparing the deals on Prime with other places and telling you what's a good deal because not all of them are good deals. A lot of them aren't. And what is isn't what is. Thrifter, which is Renee Ritchie's company, Mobile Nations, also will be doing the same thing. So probably before you buy on Prime Day, it'd be a good idea to check out the wire cutter.
They need to automate that thing.
Yeah.
All that price checking. And then if something gets sold,
I don't think you can scrape Amazon for that sort of thing. I feel like there was a lawsuit
somebody had a Raspberry Pi, a little bit of Python code, there's nothing they couldn't do.
Mm-hmm. Just saying. I'll be running off my Amazon Fire 10 with the Google Play Store.
Ooh, nice.
There you go. Now, Kevin found some good deals on Google stuff, coincidentally tied to Pi Day or Prime Day.
What?
Not Pi Day.
Well, it would make sense. Google would want to offer some deals on its stuff.
They teamed up with Amazon's arch nemesis, too. And I'm just realizing this, Kevin.
We talked about this 6 hours ago. How could you?
Was it Walmart that they're teaming up?
It was Walmart.
Interesting.
Yeah. Funny how it's the same day, the 17th, and you can get all the Google stuff with rebates. So you get the Google store sale price plus rebates. It's like a Home Mini was $19 net. You can get two Google Home Maxes, the big speakers, for $498 after rebates.
Where is this?
I think
it on the Google store?
No. This is just on Walmart.com. I remember where I read it. Mashable had it. That's where I found it.
If you are thinking about getting an Apple HomePod, seriously, stop, first of all. Seriously consider the Google Home Max, which sounds, in my opinion, every bit as good. It's more expensive, but with that deal, it's less. And you have Google Assistant instead of a dumb little Siri in there. I'm really it is on the Google store. Make waves, keep the beat, save $150 on two Google Home Max speakers. Just add them both to your cart. It's right now. So is that the deal? That's the deal you're talking about, right?
That matches the deal that I was talking about for sure. Yeah.
So they're $399. It's $800. So it's $650 for two. That makes it less than the HomePod, but you have to buy two. Ooh, students can save 10%. Using student beans.
Nest doorbell and a Google Mini are on sale somewhere for $169, which actually is a pretty sweet deal. Where did I find that?
We should do a podcast.
Deals.
The deals of the day.
Oh, CNET showed it. So it's that's a really good deal because the doorbell, the Nest Hello doorbell is, it's like $239. So they're saying you can buy the Nest Hello doorbell with the Google Home Mini for $200, and then you get a coupon code that brings it to $170, basically.
That is a good deal.
That is a great doorbell.
Yes, so it is.
I highly recommend that doorbell.
I want to team with the wire cutter, a thrifter, and have cameras in there. They must have a bullpen. A war room, right, with 20 guys typing fast as they can, and have like a microphone there and have them just run up and say, I found a great deal, and then sit down and just stream it live all Prime Day. Why don't we do that? Wire cutter, thrifter, call me. You know my number. It's 415-604-1360. I wonder if I got any...
Don't expect me to answer.
I think you've got voicemails.
Do I?
People did say that they left messages.
I don't see any.
That's what you should use as your ringtone. Beep. And everybody around you will just start saying, hi, Leo, it's me.
Beep. On iOS, you have to use a weird, it's sad what happened to Jabber. You have to use a messenger called Tagazi Messenger. It's not the best name. Oh, my God, I did. Oh my god, I got a bunch of them. Thank you. Yeah, it worked.
How does it? How's the format? Can you show us the format? Are they inappropriate?
Well, because they're inappropriate. Because it's Tagazi Messenger, it has a little tiger next to it. Here's what I was interested is how good are the transcripts?
That's what I'm interested in.
Here's the audio. That's a wave link. Voicemail transcription. Hey Leo, I hear Texas. They have done to the birds what that. Okay, that's pretty accurate. Here's another one.
Shakespeare involved in that.
Hey, Leo, I know when Jay and the chaplain. All right, just text me. All righty, bye. Here's another one. Leo, I think she really need to let you buy a shotgun,
but first home defense really need a pest.
So this is like Google Voice back in like 2000.
Yeah, it's not very high quality.
This is like drunk Google Voice.
There's just a text. Hi, Leo. Here's another one. Joe, hey, I am calling you. Thanks for the trip. This is Leo. How are you doing, baby? Anyway, thank you all for the calls. Hello, Leo. Somebody sent me, who dis? So I didn't get a whole lot, but I got a few. And yeah, the transcription's a little bit disappointing. I'll have to listen to the waves and see if they are that incomprehensible, actually. Or anyway, there's plenty more space where that came from. If you want to call me the wire cutter, we'll figure it out. Amazon devices are already on sale ahead of Prime Day, by the way. Oh, this must
35 be... 35 bucks for an Amazon Echo, I think.
35 pounds.
Oh, that's, why are you in the UK?
I don't know.
You're Mashable UK.
I'm in Mashable UK. Oh. What? What?
Uh-oh.
I got...
three barks. I forget what that means.
It means my... Oh, my Nest is probably going haywire, but my phone is not near me, so I can't look at it.
That's her ringtone, actually.
Yeah. Wait, is it? Oh, it's not September yet. I'm still waiting for my Google display unit thing. So the Lenovo one.
Yeah,
that's not till September.
September.
Did you pre-order it?
September.
I don't remember. Could we pre-order it?
I don't believe we could
yet. I may have pre-ordered it. If you could have pre-ordered it, I think we did. But I don't know if I did or not.
Well, I'm going to go check. The Lenovo smart display with Google Assistant built
yes.
in?
Yes.
No, it's a notify me.
Okay, yeah. So I signed up for notifications.
Yeah, I probably did too. Limit 5 per customer. Just get ready.
You can't. I'm not worried.
Limit 5 no. per customer. And did you get pricing? Do we know what the pricing is? Or
I think it was $199 and $250, right?
For 8 and 10?
Norm going nuts.
Norm, is that Norm?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Norm. I love the Yo Norm meme.
I thought it was $200 and $250.
I
think you're right for 8 and 10 inches.
10 inches yeah. is such a nice size.
What's nice about that, too, is that one you can switch and have it in portrait or landscape. Right. I really, really like that design.
That's because of the weird fold in the back.
The twisty thing in the back there, yeah.
Let's you stand it either way.
Yeah, I want that. Yeah. A lot.
You know, I actually, I know you laugh at me, but I like the Google, the Echo Show, the Echo version of this. And I got the Fire Cube, which is designed it's pretty, okay, it's great. It works.
How does it compare to the Harmony? Does it recognize all your gear?
No. It's not a universal remote. It does recognize some stuff. So it recognized my TV. It does some TVs. It recognized my AV receivers, some AV receivers. I have a Denon and an LG. It recognizes those. I have a TiVo. I don't have a set-top box. It does recognize some set-top boxes, though, quite a few. So if you have an appropriate hardware setup, you could say things like Echo, watch Oprah, and it would turn it to the right. It would do all the doohickeys and get it on. It's really great to say turn off TV when you leave the room, and it turns off the receiver, it turns off the TV. But one of the things I really like about it is that it's essentially an Echo Show, because if you say, what's the weather, it uses your big screen TV in the same way a show would to show the weather. If you're playing music, it does the same thing the show does. It shows the lyrics. It's a little karaoke kind of a thing where it goes, the lyrics go by. And all of that stuff is great. You can, if you had the Ring doorbell or the Nest doorbell, you could say, show my doorbell, and it would be on your big screen TV. The thing I don't like about it is exactly the same problem I have with all of Fire TV devices. They're basically a vehicle for advertising Amazon. So it's very Amazon-centric, and you get a lot of ads for Amazon Prime stuff, and I don't like that.
Man, I was looking at that, but I have the Logitech Harmony Hub, which I have linked through
that
both
works
Google
really
and
well.
Echo.
And you can control it with your voice, right?
Yeah, the only reason to switch over was to get a little bit more granularity on, like, watch this particular show.
Yeah.
But that's pretty, like, first world of me. That's, like,
can you say Echo turn the TV on?
I can say echo turn on television, or
turn off
and
television.
You can actually custom turn off television. I can say turn on Netflix, and it'll link to Netflix from the Roku.
With the Fire TV Cube, you can say watch Westworld.
Right.
And it will know if you have HBO Go installed, it will know to go there. But because there's Westworld the movie and Westworld the TV show, what it does is displays the two. And then you say Echo Play 1 or Echo Play 2.
Mm, right.
So there's a little more interaction than you might want. But
okay. Yeah. The only reason I was looking at it is for that next level granularity. And because I would put that on the top of my TV setup, and it's got the IR right in there. In the Harmony, I have this little tiny little IR receiver that attaches to a cord, and it sneaks out of the cabinet. And my husband feels that it is offensive.
Nice.
I still use the most underrated set-top box there is.
What's that?
The Shield TV, yes, which is an Android TV.
I almost said Shield TV.
Yep.
I really like it. If it had YouTube TV, does it have YouTube TV?
I haven't looked.
Does it have View? Does it have PlayStation View? Do you watch a View on it?
I do watch my View. Watch MLB TV. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, because I've got it, well, it's a Google Home as well. It's a Chromecast as well. If you're into Samsung smart things, you can buy a $30 USB dongle to add Zigbee and Z-Wave radios, and now it's your smart home hub.
Oh.
Yeah. So
this is how Kevin decided he didn't like smart things.
I quite like the Shield. I use the Shield. And I also the NVIDIA Go lets you play games on it. I have the
controller. Yep.
It is a nice, it is an underrated TV device, although not cheap. That's part of the problem, is it's much more expensive than an Apple TV or a
Fire TV. You'll find it for like $170 to $200, depending on if you get the controller or the game controller.
Apple. That's the same as Apple TV.
It's a little more expensive maybe, but it's just, nobody knows about it.
Chat room, Marsworm and Sailor Lion saying, yes, YouTube TV is on it. So I have to install that.
Yay.
That's great. Yeah.
Good to know. Thank you.
I'd be more excited, except I also pay for cable. I also have an Apple TV. I also have a Roku TV. I have way too many ways to watch TV. New book coming out that the chat room says you got to tell everybody about. It's called Valley of Genius, The Uncensored History of Silicon Valley by Adam Fisher. I'm reading it right now. I'm loving it. It's actually already out. I think it's out, right, Karsten? Or did I get an advanced copy? I have it. It's really good interviews with many of the people you know and many of the people you don't know who made Silicon Valley the amazing place it is. Adam's going to be our guest on Triangulation on the 22nd, I think. Is that right? Coming up this month.
20th.
But you can read an excerpt right now in Vanity Fair's Hive. Google was not a normal place. Bryn Page and Mayer on the accidental birth of the company that changed everything. So if you want to get a sense of it, this is probably a great way to start. Lots of good interviews in this. It's a really fun book to read. The Valley of Genius, The Uncensored History of Silicon Valley, as told by the hackers, founders, and freaks who made it boom. And I am really looking forward to talking to Adam about this. He interviewed so many, more than 100 people. And what's nice is the book is transcripts of the interviews, which I kind of like. It's the Studs Terkel method. You know, you hear them in their own voices, which is really nice. Okay. What else do you want to talk about? TimeHop had a breach. If you use TimeHop, which I did for a long time, in order to use TimeHop, you had to sign in through Facebook and then give it permission to access all of your other social accounts. And they got breached on the 4th of July. They say they caught the bad guys in progress, but some data was taken. They handled it well. They reset all of the tokens that allowed. So if you were, you know, whoever got your information at least can't access your Instagram, Facebook, and all that stuff.
Seems like every week there's something going on now with breaches. I almost
don't want to report them. 21 million users, 21 million emails.
It's a lot.
Yeah, they published what they did really nicely, I thought. And maybe this is GDPR. I bet it is. Is published a table of the number of breached records.
Mm-hmm. And the number that are affected by GDPR, they're required within 72 hours to publish this. So maybe this is the first, maybe one of the reasons we've seen so much breach information this week is thank you, GDPR.
Oh, but see, we're already desensitized. Oh, no.
We are. Because just as Kevin said, there's been nothing but for the last week. Polar. Do you use Polar, Kevin, when you run?
I use Runkeeper when I run, but I used the Polar app because I had the Polar Android Wear Watch for a while.
So Polar Flow was the app. But as a runner, this is very common. All the apps, Strava, Polar, Runkeeper, will keep a map of your run. They'll tell you your pace. They'll tell you how far you ran, all that stuff. And a lot of runners make it public. Do you make yours public?
The data, in terms of the stats, my pace, how far I went, et cetera, that's public. The maps are limited to my friends.
Okay.
On the app.
So the problem that happened with Strava is some smart reporter looked at the aggregate maps, and you could see places there wasn't supposed to be anybody, a lot of people running around.
And the heat maps.
Yeah. There were heat maps, effectively. And the military, of course, fitness is as a priority. A lot of them use those apps. They were able to deduce there's some secret military bases that aren't on the map, but we can see them because there's a lot of military guys running around them. This one's a little bit different. Polar had a flaw in their API and used simple serialized index numbers for all its users. So it was able with the API to make requests for the data. I'm not clear if it was all the data or just the public data. It might have been some private data, but I think some of the blame falls on the users, because the Dutch newspaper that discovered this was able to, here's a guy who spends a lot of time walking around the NSA. Let's figure out who it is. Oh, now let's see where he goes. Oh, that's his home address. That's bad operational security. So some of the blame goes on, if you're a spy, you probably shouldn't be wearing a device that publicly publishes your heat map. But also Polar didn't do a good job in keeping that stuff private. So
yeah, I've played with the Runkeeper Health Graph, which is their API, a little bit, just to see if I can dig at my own data. And, you know, you needed to get tokens and IDs and credentials and all that. So I can't speak for all the companies, but they seem to have locked it down, and they haven't had a breach yet, but you never know. It's getting to the point where I almost don't want to use any cloud-based anything anymore.
Yeah. Well, you know? I was really bummed that Tinder's now encrypting your photos. That's a bummer. Apparently they weren't.
There is so much data that is...
Yeah, it's all out there. If you're putting it... Look, guys, NSA guys, if you're putting it, or whoever, on the internet, you might want to think about, who might get it.
I will say, like, the fact that Congress is writing, I think they're writing letters to Google.
Ron Wyden wrote to Tinder about this.
Oh, well, I'm thinking about Google and the Gmail privacy policy.
Yeah.
So they want them to testify. I feel like, hey, maybe this is a good time to talk about creating these sort of usable labels for how data is used.
Right.
Because it's not like Congress is, I mean, yes, Google has these wonderfully opaque terms and conditions, but come on, people, no one reads them. And now that we know this, maybe we should talk about making something more usable that everyone could read.
Actually, this story annoyed the hell out of me.
Okay.
This, and I think I'm going to channel Jeff Jarvis on this one.
Techno panic.
No. This started July 2nd. We didn't get to talk about it. I got to log into my Wall Street Journal so I can show you the whole article. But the Wall Street Journal has a long history. Jeff's pointed this out many times, of sliming Google, in its pages. And it, you don't have to think too hard about why it might do that because, Google probably takes a little bit of money off of the table with its advertising, and the journal may not like that so much. There may be other political reasons as well. So they published what I considered a kind of a scurrilous article, Tech's Dirty Secret. Okay, that right there. The app developers sifting through your Gmail. Well, if you read it carefully, what it really is, yes, if you sign up for a service that reads, you know, that, for instance, looks for shopping receipts in your Gmail and then finds better deals for you, I'm shocked to learn that it's reading your Gmail. Well, duh.
You approved it.
You said yes, and you wanted that service. We know that some of these guys are pretty unscrupulous. Unroll.me, which had a very nice feature, would let you unsubscribe from newsletters. Turned out they were gathering other stuff from your email and selling it to companies like Uber. And I immediately, got rid of Unroll.me. So you want to be careful about who you give access to your Gmail to. But there's lots of services, Sanebox, for instance, where you give them permission because they filter your email for you. Well, how would they do that? They have to read your email. That seems obvious. The journals just shocked. And then they said, sometimes humans will even do it. And in those cases where humans were accessing the mail under very limited circumstances to do the machine learning to provide the service, how data miners see your email. If you're using any email program, and this is almost all of them, has anti-spam protections, guess what? They have to read your email. What they got wrong, and this upset lawmakers apparently, because this is what precipitated those letters to Google. What they got wrong is they said, and Google's not paying any attention to this. So Google posted a blog post in response saying, "What? No, absolutely we're paying attention to this. Every single person who asks for that kind of permission has to go through our process in which we make sure that they're doing what they said they're going to do, not something else. We're very careful about that. It's probably a good idea to go to google.com/permissions and review who you've given Gmail access to. But if you give them Gmail access, you can't very well complain that they're reading your email. That's what you gave them access for. So I think this is a case of the Wall Street Journal hoping that lawmakers would then write letters to Google and get all upset. Because I don't... Now, am I wrong? Maybe I'm wrong. I'm just channeling Jeff Jarvis. Am I wrong?
No.
I think there is a misunderstanding of how much data is gathered, how we use data. And I think it is shocking to people who may not be aware of that. So that is what I think... Do I think the article was a bit inflammatory? Yes. Do I think people are really aware of what happens with when they subscribe to these services? I don't think they are. I really don't. It's the same way I think people get surprised when I'm like, hey, you know, if you have the following home devices in your house, I could totally tell when you're home or not. And they're like, what?
Right.
It's so... Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think we have a long way to go to understanding exactly what's happening here.
So is it Google's responsibility or the company that's asking for permission to read your email to be very clear?
I think it's everyone's responsibility in this role. And that's why I think this is a great opportunity to create, like, there's some of the ideas are like a nutrition label for data.
Yeah.
Creating a simple one, some are like a good housekeeping seal of approval, but create a set of policies that make sense. So that would include things like, hey, do we share your data with third parties?
I do have to say that Google, in response to heat in years gone by, stopped reading your email.
Yeah.
Last year, they still have to scan it for anti-spam, but they stopped.
Yes.
They stopped using it for advertising.
They stopped advertising against it. And, you know, I don't care that Google, like, I was aware of this, but plenty of people are not. Plenty of people, you know, someone says, hey, you should totally sign up for Gmail. This is awesome. You should totally sign up for, and I don't think it's wrong that people expect this stuff to be easy and convenient to use. That's what we're trained for.
Okay,
and,
but,
companies take advantage of that.
So you can use, okay, so you're using Gmail. By the way, that is not enough. You then have to sign up for a service.
Right, I know. But that's, I'm just saying, this is how these, like, the tech press gets all excited, or maybe a friend uses it and like, oh, you should totally try to use this.
Right.
You're like, oh, that sounds really cool. And you click through and you do everything. I do think we need better, like, as you're signing up for something, we need an alternative to a TOS or a EULA that does something in plain English with like 4 or 5 main points that you could just be like, oh, they want that. It's kind of like now on phones. I mean, we're trained to be like, hey, this thing wants to use your camera. This thing wants your microphone. Do you want to allow it?
The journal just pisses me off. Look at this picture they use. This is just some people at Google I.O. But, of course, they use this picture in this article, and it looks like somebody's reading, you know, somebody in a Google hat is reading your mail. This is scummy. I'm sorry, journal. That's scummy. I guess I come from the point of somebody who's technically literate going, well, come on, what'd you think?
But you can't expect the rest of the world to be as technically literate.
Well, then they shouldn't use computers. Just go home. Oh, go get your buggy with its battery-powered windshield wipers. Honestly.
I mean, this is like people who, you know, when we talk about credit cards and we're like, how do they not understand interest payments? But there are plenty of people who don't, or who are in a position to not notice that. And you know, they are being taken advantage of.
So this is Earnie, which is that service I talked about that you would sign up for. By the way, you get a great benefit. They look at your mail, they look for receipts, and then they, if they find a receipt, they see if they can get a better deal. They negotiate a better price for you. They share their profits. So when you do it, it says, this will allow Earnie to read, send, delete, and manage your email. It says it very clearly. And then there's an allow button. Stacy, what more do you
want? Okay, no, so that is fine. But not everybody does that.
Yes.
Like that?
No, everybody does that.
No, they have to. They have to. Okay. If you're going to access Gmail. Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, then never mind. Gmail's fine. It's all the other services out there.
That's my point, is that what do you want, Wall Street Journal? Do you want me to come and hit somebody in the head and say, no, it said it's going to read your email. It says it. It drives me nuts. And what I feel bad is now that Google executives, I mean, I don't have no reason to offend Google executives, but Google executives now have to go to Congress and explain, well, and Congress is completely clueless. It's some nitwit congressperson who read it in the journal, so God, this is terrible. I don't know what more you could do than this. And Google
does
this.
Okay, no, that's actually, that is exactly what I'm asking for.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So we agree.
So I think even the little eye for, the eye for information, if I recall correctly, you can click that on the, and get even more information. I bet most people don't do that. So maybe.
They go allow.
Well, yeah.
But that's, we got to train users to stop doing that. Mm-hmm. This is what Google does. In order to pass a review process, non-Google apps must meet two key requirements. Accurately represent themselves. They must be clear about how they're using their data. They can't pose as one thing and do another. Must have clear and prominent privacy disclosures. Only request relevant data. They should only ask for data they need for their specific function. Nothing more. And be clear about how they're using it. We review these applications to make sure they continue to meet our policies and suspend them when we are aware they do not. I don't know what Google could do that's better than this. I don't know how it could be better. If the journal doesn't like it, they should stop using Gmail, I guess, and stop using Earnie and stop using all these other things. Because, I mean, I don't know what else you can do to make it clearer. I don't know. It just gets me angry.
Yeah, no, then that's fine. I mean, I'm thinking about the things I sign up for that I'm like, oh.
Well, Unroll Me is a good example. I mean, they were doing more than they said they would do and taking more of their data, your data, and they were selling it to other people. And Google should have caught that.
Mm-hmm. Well, there isn't an audit process for something like this. So it is unclear. Like, I assume they get complaints and that's when they look at someone. It's not like there's some person who's like going through and checking this stuff.
Well, maybe there is. Should be. I mean, this blog post implied that it's an ongoing process.
Yeah, but is it one person looking at like 800?
Yeah, that's right. Well, okay.
Joe and shipping.
So in that case,
you get a chance, Joe.
When the member of Congress writes to you, Google, you should be, you know, say that, you know, do whatever you need to do to make it better.
Create an audit trail.
Yeah. Or you could do like the FCC does and just charge people $225 to review complaints.
Oh, that is so terrible. I'm so mad. Yep. And that is so Ajit Pai.
Are you surprised though, Stacey?
I'm not, but
me.
I don't even know anymore. I just don't know.
It is a little bit of a misleading headline. So
they didn't review every free informal complaint.
Right. And if you want, so an informal complaint can be sent for free. But if you want to make a formal complaint, you have to pay a $225 fee. And that's the question, is does the FCC even care about informal complaints? We know that when somebody pointed out that there were millions of spurious comments about net neutrality, including some created by members of Congress, phonily created by people posing as members of Congress, the FCC didn't really care. So this is the change. Currently, it says the commission will forward informal complaints to the appropriate carrier for investigation. The carrier will, underscored and italicized, within such time as may be prescribed, advise the commission in writing with a copy of the complaint of the complainant of its with a copy to the complainant of its satisfaction of the complaint or its refusal or inability to do so. The new rule, the proposed rule, the commission will forward informal complaints to the appropriate carrier for investigation and may set a due date for the carrier to provide a written response. Maybe we will. And maybe we won't.
Yeah, so basically they're abdicating their responsibility to people.
Yeah, nothing new. Nothing new.
In favor of the carriers, which is not,
It's not going to be long before we're Kazakhstan.
It already feels like we're in a second world
Trumpistan. We're in Trumpistan. So every evening for the last 4 months in Kazakhstan, social media websites have really slowed down to the point where they're unusable. It happens for a couple of hours, just as many people are winding down from a day at work. So it turns out the reason this is happening is because the opposition group leader, the Democratic Choice of Kazakhstan, DVK, is getting online. So whenever he gets online, instead of just slowing him down, they slow it all down.
Is he campaigning or something? What's he doing? I mean,
they call him an extremist group. He's a government foe, Mukhtar Ablyazov. He appears to have only a marginal following. This is an article from EurasiaNet. Has used online resources to spread the word. Mm. He's taken delivering political homilies through live video on Facebook, often in the evening. Oh, I see why they don't just slow him down.
Yep.
They don't want anybody to be able to see it.
Right.
Right.
So the government even admits that, well, we slow the internet down when he's doing that.
That's great.
This is not uncommon. This is something that happens all over the world during election cycles or to... Wow. Prevent protesting. I mean, we've seen it. Is it usual to be targeting one person? No. Mm. But slowing and throttling the internet is a time-honored tradition of dictators around the world.
Yeah. Can't watch The Bachelorette. Jerry's going online.
That's kind of remarkable. It's kind of remarkable.
So that's a lot of power. If he were smart, he'd do like a Twitter or a text kind of base campaign around that.
Yeah.
Change his schedule.
Yeah, right.
Or he could change his schedule. Yes.
Today we broadcast at 2 p.m.
Those are prime internet hours. Such a shame.
Yeah. All right. Let's take one more break and then we could do picks and numbers and things like that. How about that? Stacey Higginbotham, Stacey on IoT.com. Her compadre from the IoT podcast, and Mr. About Chromebooks.com, Kevin Toefel. He's Kevin C. Toefel on the Twitter. And she's at GigaStacy. Do the Giga folks ever complain about that?
No, why would they?
No.
Nah.
I'm amazing. They should be lucky to be associated with me.
I agree. I know we are. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. It's funny, when you're buying a house, it's already an anxiety-laden proposition. You're writing the largest check you'll ever write, spending the most money you'll ever spend for arguably one of the most important purchases you'll ever make. Why add to the insecurity with ratcheting interest rates? They seem to be going up, right? So Rocket Mortgage, our great friends from Quicken Loans, have come up with a great solution to help reduce the anxiety of home buying. With our friends at Quicken Loans, they've created the power buying process. Here's how it works. Quicken Loans will verify your income, your assets, and your credit in less than 24 hours, and then give you verified approval, which, by the way, by itself is huge, because whenever you make an offer, it's as good as cash. The seller knows you've got the money. You're good for it. So that's awesome. But once you're verified, you then qualify for the new thing, the all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval. They lock up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. You got 3 months, and you don't have to worry about ratcheting interest rates. And if the rates go down, your rate goes down. So it's a win either way. The rates will not go up. They may even go down. This is exactly what you'd expect from America's best and largest mortgage lender, Quicken Loans. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/twig. Take all the anxiety out of home shopping. Make it a pleasant experience. Make it fun. You're going in there loaded for bear. You've got the loan. You know your interest rate. It's guaranteed. Now you're ready to buy. Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, and MLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. Rocketmortgage.com/twig. Go, just one more reason. Get set up with Rocket Mortgage before you go home shopping. Rocketmortgage.com/twig. Did we mention before, had we mentioned Amazon buying PillPack before? We've been gone for 2 weeks. Did that happen in the 2 weeks we were gone? $1 billion? I think it did. I know it did. I know we mentioned it.
We didn't talk about the Google game console news.
Oh, what do you think of that? I don't know. I think that's a rumor, but we can. This is from Kotaku, which is a gaming site. They say sources claim Google is planning a game platform to take on Xbox and PlayStation. You know, the NVIDIA Shield is a game platform. You know, Android TV can be a game platform. The rumor is that it'll be a streaming platform with includes hardware and attempts to bring game developers under the Google umbrella. I don't know what that means, whether through aggressive recruiting or major acquisitions. And Kotaku says this is the word from five people who have either been briefed on Google's plans or heard about them secondhand. Is that a source? That's not a source. Heard about this.
Maybe, but I wonder why would they want to do this? I think, all right, so you want to get the Twitch audience, right?
They tried to buy Twitch. They lost to Amazon.
Well, then maybe this is legit then. Getting data from gamers?
You know, they have the television platform for the next generation. What if they have the sports platform for the next generation?
Right.
True.
That was my only thought on this. I was just kind of curious because I am not a gamer. So I'm like, I would not.
Have you done GeForce Now? Have you used that, Kevin, on your Shield?
Yeah, the subscription-based one where they stream the games.
Yeah.
I did. You got to have a fast internet pipe, obviously. But, you know, I couldn't even tell the difference between playing the same game on that versus my Xbox One at the time. I mean, 1080p, 60 frames a second, and it's all coming from the cloud. Yeah. It was amazing.
It was the only way I could play No Man's Sky because I didn't have a PlayStation 4. Now it's coming out on Xbox One after everybody lost interest. But I like it. You know, streaming games, you're right. It's more, though, than just bandwidth. It's really low latency as well.
Yes.
It seems to work pretty well, but I wasn't playing a first-person shooter, so it's fine for No Man's Sky. It was the only issue with No Man's Sky is that the startup time was pretty slow. It took a while to get one.
Is it still like $9 a month to have it?
Yeah, I forget. I think so. I still have the membership, and I haven't, frankly, played any
games since No Man's Sky. Probably one of many subscriptions I should probably cancel.
Isn't there a service that will like look at your credit card bill and tell you what subscriptions you have?
Yeah, if I let them look at my Gmail.
Your email.
Yeah, well, okay.
It is. It's called Trim. Trim.it. I use it. Let me see. PlayerUnknown's Battleground you could play. Fortnite you could play. Let's see what the games. GeForce Now supported games. Oh, there's quite a few titles. Rocket League.
It's not going to have every AAA title, but you know they add on a monthly basis decent games.
Yeah, Call of Duty games. Mm-hmm. The Elder Scrolls, Skyrim. I love that game. It's 1080p, but that's good enough. You know, I mean, you have an Xbox One?
I do. It's collecting dust.
Yeah.
Yeah. I bought a Nintendo Switch, and that's it for me. It's as complicated as I can get.
Yeah.
Super Mario.
Yeah.
We have that. We do not have an Xbox.
You shouldn't. Don't get one. It's a bad idea. Nah.
Yeah. We don't. I'm like, unless Nintendo, we're a Nintendo family.
Yeah. It's the family thing.
You can buy mine.
Oh, there you go.
That's okay.
Work that out. Work it out between yourselves.
I'm good. We're good.
All right.
I think my parents have an Xbox that they used as like a video streaming platform.
I use it for that.
Way back in the day.
Yeah, my Xbox One is, has Netflix and all that stuff. But that's my problem. I have on one TV, my nice 4K HDR in my office. I have everything: the Cube, an Xbox, a TiVo, a Fire TV, an Apple TV, a Roku TV, everything. And I can watch Netflix on every single one of them.
Even on the Switch.
Yeah. We have a Switch, but it's hooked up. It's not hooked up to my TV. All right. Stacey, is there something you'd like to talk about today?
I have a lovely thing to talk about. So I am going to talk about something that is on sale for Amazon Prime Day and is sufficiently weird that you guys will be excited. I told you about it, I think, a couple weeks ago whenever I was last on the show. I showed you the parts for connecting my sink to Amazon Alexa voice service, and I did it.
Now, when she says sink, it's a sink.
It's literally the kitchen sink.
Oh, Stacey, this is great. This is the video. She shows you how to do it. So what do you think?
So, all right. It's going to be $500 on Prime Day. It's worth noting for the stainless steel. There's two technologies here. One is capacitive touch. The second is the Echo. If you are looking at upgrading your sink, I'm going to say go all in on capacitive touch. I think it's amazing. It means you just touch your sink anywhere on the faucet or the handle. It turns on and off. It's awesome. And if your hands are dirty, you could use your elbow. Sometimes I whack, with my forehead when I'm holding a big pot. It's very nice. The second element is the Madam A enablement. It's pretty cool. Like, I like it. I wouldn't spend like an exorbitant amount of money on this. The nice thing is if you want the capacitive touch, it's only like $25 extra to get the Echo capability. The best feature is you can say, hey, Madam A asked Delta to dispense 48 ounces of water.
That's kind of cool.
It is cool. And yeah. My husband loves it. I get frustrated because I can never remember the syntax. So I'm always like, Alex or Madame A, dispense 48 ounces of water. And she's like, I can't do that yet. Ugh. So that's, I did a pretty big review.
You need to put labels everywhere with the syntax, like on your cabinets.
So they actually give you a little card that comes with it. And it's like, this is your coaster for your Echo. So you can see what to tell your sink. Which I'm like, no.
I only have one question, Stacey. Is that how your sink is underneath, really? Or did you clean it up just for the video?
Oh, no, I had to install something under the sink.
Where's the buckets, the sponges, the 15 different kinds of dishwasher soap? What kind of sink user are you?
If you scroll down the story and you don't look at the video, there's a picture of me with all of the stuff from the sink.
Oh, okay. All right.
So if you, that's the inside with the Ethernet.
Oh, there it is.
See?
Oh,
there's the sink stuff. I'm a
relieved.
Human being.
And I'm glad to know you take off your shoes before you operate, as every good doctor should.
I'm like, it's electricity and water. I probably should have kept them on.
I would have wear rubber galoshes. Yeah. No, yeah. This is good. This is really thorough. Well done. Bravo.
Super fun.
Nice. StacyOnIoT.com for her review of the Delta Touch faucet with Amazon Echo.
You can get that on Prime Day.
$499.99.
Yep.
So what is it normally?
$499.99.
This is the first time it's going to be available for sale for anyone.
Oh, it's launching on Prime Day.
It's launching on Prime.
Oh. And so, if you want Arctic stainless, that's $25 more. Just so
it is a fancier finish. It's a brushed, and I asked because I am diligent that way. Arctic stainless looks like stainless, only there's more white and less yellow, so it's a little bit brighter.
Now, you did the expert installation yourself. If you had the choice, would you pay $182.75, or would you do it yourself?
I already had the capacitive touch, so for me, it was a simple, like, you open the things. If I had to replace a whole faucet, actually, I would just totally do it, because I do everything. I try it, and then so I break it, and my husband's like, oh, my God.
Time to call a plumber again.
So.
Nice.
Yeah.
Kevin, you got a pick, a tip, something for us?
I got a little new feature in Chrome that kind of should remind you of Android, because it's the same feature that Android has with the app shortcuts. Like if you tap and hold on an Android app right now, you get these little shortcuts that will bring you to certain activities. Yeah. You can now do that in Chrome OS on the dev channel for sure. And one of my readers just commented he's got it on the beta channel as well. So that's a good thing. And it's just a Chrome flag setting. So Leo, you could just switch the flag on and you're good to go. Nice. It's an enable touchable app context menu, which is a mouthful.
So you have to have an Android app to do this.
Installed,
right?
That's correct. Yeah, yep.
It's not just for any old apps.
Nope.
And you have to turn it on in the Chrome flags.
In the Chrome flags. And it doesn't matter if the Android app is in the shelf or the app launcher, wherever it is, you can long press and get the shortcuts.
When did they start rotating the wallpapers properly? I'm just so glad that they did that.
With the Surprise Me feature?
Well, for a long time, I was just... Mm-hmm. Surprise Me gave me one wallpaper.
Yeah, they have changed... Well, so you even have an older version of the wallpaper. There's a new one that's even better, very material design looking and all that. And
does it download new ones or...
It actually goes out to a server. They have a service that's running with it. I believe it's the same. They're going to be putting it together with the same one that the Chromecast uses. Backdrop?
Oh, I love that. Because that, you know, by the way, can have your own pictures in that as well, which is nice.
Right. Yeah. So, but you'll be able to get like backdrop type rotating pictures on the wallpaper, which is weird because we really never see the wallpaper.
I know, but notice it's now going down into the menu bar. I don't know if that's a new feature too, but the menu bar is not separate. These are just little icons floating on the wallpaper, which is
there's nice. A flag to have that as transparent or color. So
yeah, I don't think I set that, so it must be
It probably came with the dev channel.
That old dev channel got me in its spell.
I wish Google, when it runs photos of things for Chrome for any background, would tell you where these places are.
They do on Chromecast, don't they?
They do on Chromecast?
Yeah, I thought so.
Mine does not. What am I missing?
They do on Chromecast.
Yeah, when it first comes up, there's a little like MTV style little box, doesn't it?
Maybe mine just says who took the photo.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so if you uncheck Surprise Me, it is now saying in the control panel, this is by Mike Rafeman. But you're right, it doesn't say where. It does give you a link to his website. So maybe, there you'd be able to see in his galleries. So you'd at least be able to do some research. But yeah, I agree with you. I often want to see that. That's one thing on Windows, they have the Bing wallpaper, and it does give you additional information, which is really nice.
Mm-hmm.
And this is there's another pretty one. These are pretty.
Some of these places, I'm like, oh, I totally want to go for that.
You know, it's actually a feature Apple just added to the Apple TV. They actually mentioned it on stage during the WWDC, is now we'll tell you what you're looking at.
here's the new one.
Oh, why don't I? I wonder why I don't have that. Huh?
There's a flag for that, and it's got a little explore link, so you can actually get more information about the picture and who took it and where it is and all that. So it kind of is going with what you're looking for, Stacey.
Would you know what the name of the flag is?
I think it's wallpaper picker. Actually, yeah, just do a find on the do a find for wallpaper.
There's a flag for everything in Chrome.
Yep.
Is it Chrome /flags?
Chrome:/flags. I actually bookmark that, which is kind of silly, but you're right. There's so many flags that it doesn't make sense to type it all the time.
Enable new wallpaper picker.
There you go.
That's the setting, enabled.
Nice. And it'll make you restart the browser port.
It does. I have to restart.
Anytime you change a flag, pretty much. It's quick.
All right. Yeah, it is. I already kind of mentioned my pick, which is a Jump Jot Chat. Do I want to mention this teletext? I think it's gone. I really liked this site, but I think they're gone. tstop.co.uk. I found this. I like to browse like the Pinboard popular and Reddit and so forth. And this was really cool. They were simulating a teletext terminal on a website, but it's gone now. So I can't make that my pick. Everybody, we're out of time, but we have had some fun. Stacey Higginbotham is at stacyoniot.com. Subscribe to her free newsletter, as I do. It's a great read all about IoT. And, of course, she and Kevin do a great podcast together. What's the name of that podcast so people can ask for it on their Amazon's Echoes?
The Internet of Things podcast. You have to go with all the words.
So you could say, Echo, listen to the Internet of Things podcast.
You would say, play the Internet of Things podcast.
Yeah, and you'd get it.
And it shall happen.
And it shall happen, the most recent episode. Kevin Toefel's new site, newish site, is about Chromebooks.com on the web. And a must read if you have a Chromebook. Or if you're thinking about a Chromebook. It's kind of the, you know, like the definitive information about the Chromebooks. You've done a really good job with it.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. Always great to see you and Norm.
We didn't see Norm.
No, is Norm around? He's
still recovering from his trip down to Washington, D.C. He took two Ubers there. He visited a bunch of museums.
You got to see the picture. Go to Kevin's Instagram, Leo. Man, this picture is adorable.
What's your Instagram? Kevin Toefel?
Kevin C. Toefel.
Kevin C. Toefel. Is there a
you
Kevin Toefel without
this.
The C? Is there a reason why you use that C?
I hope not. I've always used my middle initial.
Norm. Oh, Norm.
Keep going.
Norm in our nation's capital.
There it is.
How do you get in the toll booth?
This is the best.
1 hour into the vacation and the humans figure out they forgot their cash. Nice. I suppose I can work a shift to bail them out. Oh, Norm. You're in again.
He has fans everywhere.
That's so cute. What is, you said he's a Bichon Frise. Is that what he is?
He is.
Yeah.
He is.
Oh, Norm. Norm's napping.
Yep.
That's so
cute. He's always napping.
He is a sweet dog. I wish my Bichon had been as chill as Norm. Mine was
nice. Norm sleeps a heck of a lot. He can be pretty wild, but no, he likes to just crash.
It's not a bad thing in a dog.
No.
In my humble opinion. All right, everybody. We are so glad you were here. We do This Week in Google every Wednesday, my last show of the week, because I start on Saturday. If you want to see it live, you can. We do it about 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 20:30 UTC. You can watch it twit.tv/live. You can listen there, too. We have an audio stream if you're at work. If you do go in the live show, though, you should join us in the chat room, irc.twit.tv. That's always fun. And if you can't do it live, you can always do it on demand. Audio and video of everything we do available at our website, twit.tv. In the case of this show, twit.tv/twig. And, of course, if you want to hear it on your voice-activated device, play This Week in Google. We'll do it. Or subscribe in your favorite podcast application. That way you'll get it the minute it's ready every single week. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Stacey. Have a great week. We'll see you next time.
You too. Thank you. On This Week in Google. Bye.